Big Ten Plus 4 is a member of Odd Pods Media and ASAP All Sports All Plays Network.
Welcome into Big Ten Plus 4, college sports with a Midwest perspective, blue collar and blue blood. I'm Dalton Shetler. If you're joining us on the visual medium, that's Tony Hollinsworth there in the middle, Sam Sprunger on the far end. Fellas, how are we doing?
I'm a little flummoxed.
Flummoxed.
Yeah, let's pull out the fun words this morning.
I was going to say, somebody thumb through the thesaurus before jumping on the show today.
Tony, go ahead. I'll explain mine afterwards.
Okay. I mean, I'm feeling great. The Badgers took an ill last night, so it's a great day here in the Midwest. Just want to throw that out there.
You really don't like the state of Wisconsin because you don't like the Packers either.
No, you know, that's the crazy part. When I went to Wisconsin with my ex-wife, state is absolutely beautiful. The weather was super nice. Like, everything about the state except for their sports teams is absolutely
perfect. Spotted Cow, Wisconsin is a game changer. I mean, that's
my brother does a lot of travel and business in Canada, and he goes up through Wisconsin because he's got some customers there too, and every time he comes through Wisconsin, he'll send me a picture of a spotted cow that he's enjoying. From my understanding, that's the only place you can get it.
Yep. And for somebody who that's the top of my list. so it's your favorite place to go. Yeah. I've toyed with the idea of like presenting a family vacation in Milwaukee and coming back with a U-Haul where we just load it back and not even to sell and put on the other marketplace, like the illegal activity. Like I just would like to have it because it's such a frustrating experience to not have that.
The only problem is you don't want it to go skunk. So you've either got to buy a lot and drink a lot or buy conservatively and drink your normal way.
Right. Oh shoot. Okay, so Tony says he's feeling great. You actually had something else on Wisconsin, I noticed. You peaked up for a minute.
A little bit. I will say it's kind of a touristy destination, but we did end up going through the Dells when we were coming through Wisconsin. And the Dells is kind of a cool little place. It's got its own little water park, like it's its own little like kind of village town that's actually pretty cheap and inexpensive, or at least it was 7 years ago when I was married.
Okay, that's might be one to put on the hit parade for the future endeavors. Sam is flummoxed. Now we need to find out the root cause of why Sam is flummoxed.
Look at the picture. This game was absolutely, it was 10-7 Georgia at the end of the first quarter.
Yep.
And by the halftime, it was over. That's why I'm fine. I didn't think TCU was not going to show up. And Georgia being so dominant. I knew Georgia was good. I knew they'd be on point. I figured TCU would be better. I thought this game would be much better. That's why I am flummoxed. That's one heck of a segue is what that also is, Dalton.
Yeah, sure is. Well, to the point, and for those who are just joining us on the audio medium, we have the graphic up of Georgia and TCU from the national championship game. And if you missed this one, you're okay.
Look at the box score. It literally was that game.
What was the final? I pulled it up
65-7.
So I got comfortable. I waited until I'm usually one that will hang around a little bit longer, I think, than the normal person just to see. At halftime, I was over it. I think it was 38-7 at halftime. And I said, oh, I can comfortably walk away and go on with the rest of my night. Now, this is interesting, but much to your point, and this kind of follows the logic that a lot of folks were applying before the game, was that you go back to that semifinal game. Michigan was a better team than TCU. Yeah. TCU just found a way to win that game. They made the plays. They answered the bell when they needed to. And everybody's theory was, well, eventually, especially when you're playing the most elite talent in the country, eventually that luck or whatever you want to call it or chalk it up to, it factor, whatever, it kind of runs dry. Now, running dry and getting handed a 55-point loss isn't quite what I saw. I saw Georgia winning this game kind of going away, but they went all the way back to Athens with it from L.A. Like,
they had
it
their
was...
feet up at home in Athens after a night of celebrating by the time that, I mean.
Ugga was asleep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Ugga didn't even need to see the second half.
Well, Ugga didn't make the trip either.
That's what I mean. He was on his little dog bed sitting there and just... Another one. Yeah. Another one.
Well, Are y'all done yet?
Much to your point there, Dalton, is, you know, eventually when you go against elite, your luck is going to run out. You know, and I use the air quotes. I don't think TCU was lucky. They're very, very, very good. They got the element of surprise against one elite team, and they did it last week instead of this week.
Well, can I say this? Because I think this is maybe the better, more accurate way to clarify or label it as is TCU put themselves in great spots to win games throughout the years, maybe in times where it seemed out of reach, and they found ways to put themselves in spots. That takes skill, heart, everything else. Mm-hmm. But the fact that one after another, after another, after another, they're able to finish those off. There's a little bit of luck or something involved with that.
I'm not saying that it's not, but it's not just luck. I mean,
that's what I think is correct. Yeah, the right way to put it.
Yeah. TCU did get an element of surprise at what Michigan was expecting from them. And I think the fact that they had to throw that out against Michigan is they didn't have enough to surprise Georgia with for an entire game. After one quarter, it was 10-7. It was still legitimately a game. Within 3 minutes of game time in that quarter, Georgia was up 14. It just got out of hand quickly.
Well, and let me ask both of you this. What do you think about Georgia? Because to me, from what it looked like, no team took TCU seriously this year at all. Like, nobody in the Big 12, I think, took them seriously. Even after they got ranked and, you know, they started to slowly climb the ranks, everybody's like, oh, it's a fluke. They're going to get beat. Somebody's going to knock them off. We're going to be the team. We don't have to worry about it. And then, you know, like you guys said, between a mixture of luck and doing just enough to put themselves in good positions to win, they keep finding a way to win. To me, I think Georgia is the only Kansas State, because they're the only other team that beat them besides Georgia this year. Kansas State and Georgia were, to me, the only two teams that even remotely took TCU seriously throughout the entirety of the year.
I think there's something to that. I mean, when you're talking about TCU being seventh in the Big 12 in the preseason rankings that they pooled together, like I do think they went through the vast majority of this season under the radar. I do think there is something to that.
Every week, though, Dalton, I heard whenever TCU started getting higher in the polls, every week when they were going against, let's say, Oklahoma State, well, this is going to be the week TCU gets bitten. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then, oh, wait, they played Baylor. Oh, this is going to be the week TCU get. They just every week they kept being written off as not as good. And that's a shame to those kids that are there at TCU busting their humps. But at the same time, it was their driving force, I think. I think they took that personally. Everybody just was always writing us off. We're going to show them. We're going to prove them wrong. So it's a shame because honestly, they're one of the top four best teams this year. But honestly, out of the final four, I would say they were fourth.
Yeah. Yes. 100% correct. And by the way, that's not necessarily an indictment. Like we continue to say, but I don't want any listener to get the wrong idea here. TCU deserves a hearty congratulations on their season.
For sure.
Honestly, it was inspiring. It was fun to watch. It was a terrific story. It was awesome to go from 5-7 to the national championship game and to get the win against Michigan in the semis. I mean, it's tremendous. So
I wouldn't like a psychedelic toad shirt.
Well, yeah, I mean, that goes without saying, right?
Well, and I'm not going to lie, I learned something about TCU last night, too, because I kept seeing everybody throw it up. I did not know that this was like the horn frog, logo thing. I was like, is that what your hands are going to look like after you're done after this? Or is it supposed to be the hip notes? I'm like, okay.
I didn't know that, but wow. Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't know until Lee Corso was. And I have so many questions about that.
Threw on the ball cap and
he threw that on and he threw that on and he just kept standing there and I'm like, is Lee stuck? They got to get his fingers unstuck. Lee can't get him undone. Help the man out.
This game was not at all how I thought it was going to go. I could have, like you said, Dalton, Georgia at the end kind of going away. You know, if it was 20 points, it was because Georgia tacked on, you know, a couple of touchdowns late or whatever and just kind of blew it wide open. I did not foresee a 55-point game. No. That's 8 touchdowns.
And you got to remember, Stetson Bennett counted for 6 of those, 4 through the air and then 2 on the ground. And then they put the backups in and the backup scored 2 touchdowns.
That was the kicker is I had it on my phone while I was doing some actual like my day job work and I was watching it and it was mop up time and Georgia was still running the ball just like knife through butter.
Well, since we're on the conversation now of Georgia and we talked about taking things personally, there's been a clip that's made its rounds on social media during halftime. Of course, Nick Saban, the Alabama coach, was joining ESPN for its all kinds of coverage. I mean, ESPN, the megacast coverage is so extreme.
They do that right.
I agree.
Because they give every audience an opportunity to watch the game in their way. I love it.
And you know what? Like, had I not walked away from the TV, which is obviously a big part of the problem for ratings, like the game itself was that. But right. I would have liked bouncing around maybe to some of the other streams, like the Pat McAfee. I think that would have been a fun way to be entertained in the final 30 minutes when it's already just chalked up as what the result is.
But I prefer the Monday night call of the Mannings over.
That was great. I was getting thrown out
over
there.
Joe Buck and Aikman.
Troutman, yeah.
Now, that's not to say I won't watch the original call, but I do like watching that talk show style.
Yeah. Well, because it makes it more fun and it gives the fan kind of a more realistic perspective. Like you hear Joe and Troy, like they'll try to do that, but their main thing is actually calling the game.
Give
play
us the
is
nuts
run,
and bolts. Give
it.
Us the ins and outs of a player. Yeah. Give us that because that's what a main call should be.
Yeah. Yep. But the Mannings, you know, they throw a little bit more personal experience into it. They do a little bit of that, but you know, again, it's more of a talk show. They kind of share stories about, hey, we've run stuff similar to this, or you know, hey, I did this, or you know, Eli's head
or
was too big
the
for
play.
The helmet, you know, something like that. Yeah. Like that is more of a fun thing. And I think if they were to do something like that, that would be hilarious.
Well, and my thing is, last year I preferred the Manning cast over the Monday Night Football crew, but with Buck and Aikman, I think they do such a good job at covering the story and the game. And maybe I'm privy and just biased as a broadcaster, but the information I gather from those telecasts, like
you
that's
broadcasters.
Yeah, you know what I mean? But I'm thinking through the same prism. Yeah, right, that's right. This community.
I appreciate broadcasting too, but like I like the nice mix of, you know, yeah, I even do it every per game that I'm watching. I'll jump over to the regular broadcast and then I'll pull it back to the Manning one, and that's if I'm watching Monday Night Football. I don't watch much NFL, but when I do, I'll flip back and forth because I enjoy it. I'm a casual NFL watcher.
And don't get me wrong, I applaud doing things like the Manning cast. I think we need more and more unique and different things. I think everybody's been just trying to copy whatever the model has been. I like some different things branching out. But back to what started this, at halftime, Nick Saban, Alabama's head coach, was on the set talking with David Pollack and I think Desmond Howard. And David Pollack had said, you know, Georgia now, last 2 years winning these titles, they've grabbed a hold of college football. And the camera cuts to Nick Saban's face, and it felt like there was a literal pill the size of his head that he was swallowing down. Like you could see the anger, the drive that just came over him, and it made you think, what happens next year now? Because Nick Saban's going to sit on that for 200 days and just unleash it. But my other question too is, what do we do with Georgia? Because you talked about their second wave comes in and is still running away in this title game. Kirby Smart's got a factory down in Athens now that are back-to-back champs and may not be letting up.
And not one that visits the portal. Like last year, they brought 0 players in from the portal. Yep. It was all roster and freshman, incoming freshman, and it's still stacked.
Yeah. Well, and you notice the best teams in college football, that's how they operate.
They Bama's might add the same a couple way. Of pieces, but it, most of the time it's not a revamping. They're just adding maybe a supplementary piece to the what they've got.
Look at Ohio State. Look at Michigan. Like, the best programs in college football are not just living in the transfer portal.
So is the transfer portal, and I know this is not at all what we're talking about. This is a complete tangent. But is the transfer portal kind of like a trickle-down effect is what it kind of it is?
In
is
what way?
Those big recruits that go to Alabama, that go to Georgia, that go to Ohio State, they go there with the ambition to become stars there. They realize that maybe it's not going to pan out, so they trickle down to a lesser program and become what they should have become, you know, and flourish.
I think maybe, but I think now it does give them a better opportunity, and it kind of opens the door to maybe some of those college programs that, while they're not built like how Georgia, Michigan, Ohio State, Alabama are, through a lot of just big brands, they've had, you know, recent success. Now it's okay. I'll take, you know, USC, for example. You know, you get the big guy in Lincoln Riley. You know, it's an old brand that does have success. It's kind of coming back. You know, like you said, if you go to Alabama and you're like, I have ambitions to be a star, well, you probably are. You're probably one of the best players in the country, but you're also playing fourth string to,
right,
you know, three other guys. Well, if I go to USC, I have the opportunity to not only be a star, but I can also probably be the starter for the team and be great. So,
right, but the grandiose idea is I'm one of the best players. I'm going to that mystique and becoming a star there. Then when they realize it doesn't, it trickles down to the next level, I guess.
So I think
playing field a little bit.
Well, and I think this, the transfer portal is such a giant ecosystem. I think that's a lane of the transfer portal. I would grant that, but it's not absolute what the transfer portal has
absolutes, Dalton, in life.
Yeah, right. But like that certainly Alabama does
complaining not getting into the playoffs when they should have.
I don't know. I've heard from who was it? Chad Ochocinco. There's three guarantees in life: death, taxes, and 85 is going to be open every time.
Fair enough. Okay, we'll take that. Okay.
I love Ochocinco being referenced. Yeah. But I think that's fascinating too. Talking about the transfer portal, though, because like we're saying right now that a lot of the great football programs in the country don't really dive into the transfer portal. And what's fascinating to me, let's take a look in our backyard here in the Midwest. You have Ohio State, you have Michigan, you have Notre Dame. That's all within what, 4 or 5 hours of each other.
One another, yeah.
And they certainly will grab in different regions, but like your best kids in the Midwest are normally landing at those three schools, and they're just fighting over each other to get those. And then in the middle of that, you still have a Wisconsin, you still have Iowa just a little bit over here. You have Michigan State. Like, you got all these other great programs, great schools.
Dalton, and I didn't hear you say Purdue in there. I'm sorry.
Defending Big Ten West champion. Let me put some respect
there
on the name.
There we go. Yeah, thank you.
Well, hey, they found a way to get Rondale Moore, which, you know. But anyway, but 5 stars, 4 stars in the area, they're going to those schools for the most part. And so a lot of the other programs that aren't necessarily sitting at that table. Now, granted, there are schools doing some different things. I think, honestly, I know I'm wearing the ball cap and the hoodie, but not to be a homer and bias, I think Michigan State has done some things on the recruiting trail recently with Mel Tucker that's getting them a bit more wedged in there. But my point being, so many programs have to fight and try and find different ways to exploit margins. And the answer for them is the transfer portal when all the 5 stars are going to the big, big programs. You know what I'm saying? So I think it's interesting how this is all kind of systematically working out between the programs.
One Power Five school that I think got a steal in the portal is the UCLA Bruins, though. They got Carson Steele from Ball State.
Oh, did they? Okay. I remember him being that big time running
out
back
there in LA.
Yes, he is.
I thought you literally just did it to make a steel pun.
No. No.
Did you not even catch you made the joke?
No, I did.
I did.
Okay.
I did. But that's how serious I am about this, Dalton. There's no room for joking.
Okay. Well, good enough.
Carson Steele could be an absolute just game changer, a steal, if you will, like you said. for UCLA next year. I mean, honestly, he's that good. He's a really good back.
And there's a ton of those, like the transfer. Oh, for sure. It's quite the dynamic, but we'll hop off the transfer portal for a moment, because I do want to mention that, you know, we're talking about this championship game, Georgia 65, TCU 7. I would like to tell you that there was one real winner last night or Monday night in this championship game, and it wasn't Georgia. Do you want to know who the real winner was?
Sure.
It was the East Coast for kicking off at 7:30. Yes, the championship game being moved up. You know what? If this would have been a compelling game and we were watching all the way to the final whistle, we would have gotten some actual sleep before work the next day. And honestly, that is something to celebrate.
That is absolutely, because here's the thing. I know it's unfortunate for people on the West Coast, especially when the game is on the West Coast. But we talk about the East Coast bias. Yeah, that's because most of our country is at least, well, half the country and most of the population is on the Eastern time zone. So that, unfortunately, is where we need to be on time-wise.
You know, and I do find it interesting, much to that point, is the first time we're going to kind of implement getting back to, like, what is a sane time for kickoffs for events like this. We pick when it's LA. So this game kicks off at 4:30 in Los Angeles, where cars are stuck in traffic trying to get to the game. Like, I that one was a little bit bewildering to me, but either way, I am so excited. I want to get more events doing this. Mm-hmm. Let's play these games earlier. I was so excited by that fact. That was the best thing of the night for me.
It always grinds me that the national championship game in the NCAA tournament starts at 9. It's like, are you kidding? I'm like ready to like start winding down and getting ready to go to bed. I'm old, okay, and I'm an average age right now. Like, I'm in the median age of America, so they're over half the population's ready to go to bed at that time. Come on.
Now's not the time to throw down some buffalo wings before rolling into bed.
Yeah, I'm old. I get heartburn. Let's start at 7. Jeez. So I can eat my normal 7 o'clock dinner or 6 o'clock dinner. I'm getting close to 4 o'clock. I'm getting close.
Soon it'll be supper. I was going to say, you're moving up. Right.
I can't wait until it's 4 o'clock dinner time.
I think Tony had something on dinner. What'd you have there?
I was saying, I grew up with that all the time. It's like, I would come home from school and then my grandma was like, yeah, I'm making supper. I'm like, it's 3:30. What are you doing?
Now I start sometimes dinner at that time, but it's because it takes a few hours to make. I still eat at a normal-ish 6:30, 7 o'clock time for dinner. So
yeah, I'm not for
old
now. She was one it would take like 30 minutes to make, and then by the time 4 o'clock rolls around,
so it's 4 o'clock was dinner. Gotcha.
Yeah, I'm like I just ate like 2 hours ago. What are we doing?
But then that sets you up for the legendary recliner nap, though. The hands folded over the gut, rocked back. That's a legendary nap position. So that's your appetizer for it.
When you get older, I mean, that's at least your second or third nap of the day, because you have to start the day at like 5 a.m. just to be like, what have you done today? I've been up since 5, 9 o'clock.
Literally, you know, just so you can put it in somebody's face and then fall asleep early. Yep, it's great.
I'm the type of person, as soon as I sit down to relax, I'm out. Like watching TV, like I can sit and do my job. I can be up and moving around. But as soon as I sit down to relax, I'm out. Doesn't matter what it's for, when it is either.
Well, so again, reason for us all. One thing we can be unified about, I guess I can't say in the country, but in this time zone.
Two certainties on this show is we run long in the first quarter and Sam will fall asleep if he relaxes.
So we're not going to give him the chance to. Let's move to the second quarter now. All right, nice staying catch. Yeah, thanks. Staying with college football for a moment, we wanted to talk about this a little bit last week. We, I think, mentioned it briefly, highlighted on it throughout the week. Yeah. But we wanted to bring it back. Michigan head football coach Jim Harbaugh. We wanted to talk about the saga that's going on there, because it seems like every single year we have the same discussion. I don't know where our listeners stand on it. I guess I don't even know where both of you stand on it.
Actually, let's sorry to cut you off there, Dalton, but I ran a poll on this actually.
Oh, okay.
On our Twitter. So let me go to our page and refresh and get the final results for said poll.
Well, as you do that, I'll explain the situation. Yeah, and then once you have that, get that ready. But again, Jim Harbaugh having another tremendous year at Michigan, ends up winning the Big Ten title for the second straight year after starting his tenure at Michigan and always seeming to come away with 9 wins, 10 wins on a season, but never really winning the big ones. He's finally crossed and gotten over that hump. But that hasn't stopped the flirtations with the NFL because last year, Minnesota Vikings interviewed him for the job. He didn't get the job. Now it's said that he's still interested in the NFL. So the success hasn't stopped him from his pursuit of getting back into the NFL ranks. How did we land on our page there, Sam?
Okay. So the poll question was when the 2023 college football season kicks off in September, will Jim Harbaugh be the coach of University of Michigan football? 57.1% of our voters said no, he will not be
at Michigan. Interesting. Okay.
So there's actually still a couple of hours left, but by the time people are seeing this, it's closed. It's closed.
Okay. But 57% say no, he will not be at Michigan anymore. Let's get both of your thoughts on it. We can start with Tony. Tony, Jim Harbaugh, will he leave Michigan? And if so, in the NFL, there's quite a few different franchises that are actually kind of in the market looking for their next guy.
Yeah, you have Denver, we kind of knew early on was going to be, you know, they were looking for head coach, Indianapolis, Carolina, Arizona.
So, not to cut you off, but Indianapolis, can you imagine he becomes the golden child and the returning son to Ann Arbor and then becomes the returning son to Indianapolis where he's in their ring of honor or whatever it is in the stadium? There's a trend maybe with Jim Harbaugh, but go on, Tony.
Right. Arizona just fired their head coach and their GM. The Texans just fired Lovie Smith not too long ago as well. So there's a lot of openings. The biggest one he's been connected to, though, and I don't know why, it's the biggest dumpster fire in the NFL right now. He is connected to the Denver Broncos because there are rumors that they are prepared to give him like $20 million a year as, you know, his base incentive for coaching, which is insane to give a coach $20 million a year.
Well, since we're talking Denver, and I do want to get Sam here in just a second, I saw the comparison online that Jim Harbaugh could do in Denver maybe a little bit of what he had rolling in San Francisco, meaning with Kaepernick as quarterback, Russell Wilson as quarterback. I mean, are we buying into that, Tony? What do you think?
Yeah, had Russell Wilson not had the year that he had this past season, just being terrible, and I don't know if that was a mixture of Russ being, you know, kind of over cocky with himself, as well as Nathaniel Hackett, you know, being proved he was once again carried by Aaron Rodgers.
Let's ride.
Right. So if he can get Russ being back to the way Russ was, I think he can replicate the success because you look at how Denver is set up. They have a great offensive line, just like Michigan. They have a great defense, you know, just like the 49ers had back with, you know, when he was there. So I think it's possible if he can tap into that. My biggest thing, at least with the NFL, that makes me hesitant about that is Denver spent $235 million on Russ for 4 years. Like, that to me is where I'm hesitant because you're coming into a job and basically, hey, you need to make this guy work because we can't just cut him because that's $100 million against our cap if we just say we don't want Russ anymore. And we can't have that happen because that's a bad business move. We can't be doing this. So I'd be a little hesitant, you know, if there's anybody I think that could maybe fix it, it's Jim. But I'm like, do I want a dumpster fire here? Do I want to stay in Michigan? Maybe there's a slightly less dumpster fire I could go to. But that's how I look at it is obviously a head coach, you always want a new challenge. You want to continue to build your resume. Like he's built his resume. He rebuilt Michigan. You know, he helped get the 49ers all their pieces to click. But I don't know. Broncos country, you know, let's hide from Russell Wilson for 4 years and then come back and then you'll be good.
Sam, what do you take away from all this?
I've got a couple of different avenues that I am going to go on this. Excuse me. First off, the first time Harbaugh was in the NFL, he went to an organization that had kind of a dumpster fire of a quarterback, so they drafted Colin Kaepernick. Mm-hmm. That man then turned around and took those guys again to the NFC Championship game in Alex Smith. So the fact that Russell Wilson had a bad year this year doesn't dissuade me from Jim Harbaugh potentially wanting to go to Denver, because they have an established quarterback. And you know what? If they draft another really good one, because they're going to have a really good draft pick this year, they could get one. Oh, no, that's right. They traded it off, didn't they?
They traded it to Seattle. That's right. That's so right. Not only did they lose extremely badly, that's they right. don't have a first round pick.
That was the ultimate fleecing of an NFL trade we've had recently, what Seattle did to Denver. That was, wow. That was robbing a blind.
Here's the thing. And even if they don't get it in the first round, I mean, they could draft a quarterback much like San Francisco did in Kaepernick in a lower round. And then all of a sudden, you're looking at, you know, hey, guess what? Russell Wilson wasn't quite the dumpster. And I'm not saying it was completely coaching, but coaching does affect how quarterbacks play their game too. So while I say Russell Wilson had a really bad season, could it have been made worse by what the coach that they felt they needed to fire before the end of the season? Potentially, yes. And can next year be a lot better? Yes. I don't think... And this is where my second point is. I've never thought that Jim Harbaugh was 2 feet in at Michigan, even though he's a Michigan man. I never thought he felt like he was let go from San Francisco, so he had to go somewhere.
Yeah.
And Michigan said, hey, we'll take you. And, or, you know, do you want to come back home? And, well, sure. But that reassuring statement the other day of, I don't know what the future holds. I've loved being at Michigan, and I fully intend on being back at the beginning of the season. That doesn't make me really warm and fuzzy if I'm a Michigan fan.
I was trying to figure out after I read it. I read it back twice, mm-hmm. and I was like, this is very hollow. There's mm-hmm. not much here. I'm not even sure that I would have put out a statement if I this is all just, that I was going to put in.
Don't say anything.
There. Yeah.
Because if anything, you put more doubt in my mind. Yeah. That statement, because saying that he doesn't know what the future holds and he intends, that means if there's a better offer coming back down the pike, I'm taking it.
Yep.
I've stated from the beginning of my coverage of Jim Harbaugh and whatever facets I've covered him, which is just me paying attention to him. But my point being is I've never felt that he was all the way in, and he likes being called the pretty girl at the party. Like, he likes the attention. So if Denver's going to throw $20 million at him, guess what? He's going to Denver that shows that he's the pretty girl there. Yeah. And that's for lack of a better analogy, but mm-hmm. like he likes being that center of attention and wants to be the center of attention. So he's never been both feet in at Michigan, because it started off ominously and he couldn't beat Ohio State for many years. And now that he finally is, his stock is so high that there's a franchise in Denver that might offer him $20 million. He's selling quickly. Oh, I'm sorry. I there's no way you can convince me otherwise. If there's an offer, he's leaving.
Yeah. Now, the other thing that I forgot to kind of mention with the Russ thing that makes me kind of hesitant is, and I don't know if you guys have heard it, how much of, and I hate to even, you know, I'm not gonna call it the word that I was originally gonna call it. How detrimental Russ is to being a quote unquote teammate, because they've interviewed previous, you know, mm-hmm. Legion of Boom members about how you can't just contact Russ, you have to contact his agent. And I'm like, as a head coach, do you really want the quarterback you can't get rid of, your star guy, to be that level of toxic in your locker room that guys can't even just be like, hey man, can we talk? Yeah, you gotta go through my agent. You can't talk.
And I'm not saying it's going to work out exactly the same, but he sees that if Jim Harbaugh sees that potential of, you know, maybe Russ isn't the dumpster fire, or maybe we've just got to muddle through him for 4 years.
Maybe
he could write that in, like, hey, look, if we've got to play Russell Wilson for 4 years and he's been what he was last year, I want a guaranteed 5-year contract, you know. give me time to build underneath what Russell's doing, you know, whatever. Yeah. I don't know. I just don't think that it's enough to dissuade Jim Harbaugh. The next place I would say would be Indianapolis, because I've talked to a lot of Colts fans that wouldn't mind Jim Harbaugh. He's not a bad coach either. No. That's the thing.
No.
Yeah. no, I don't think he's a bad coach. No, I don't think he's a bad coach either.
The way I put it, and I apologize for cutting you off. The way I put it is I love his X's and O's, but I wouldn't want to be his neighbor because I think he'd try to hit my dog on purpose.
That's kind of a better, as a, I think the Shutdown Fullcast described, a podcast, and they do a great job covering college football. He's way too much dad and not enough uncle is how they describe Jim Harbaugh. And I was like, that's pretty good description, actually. But real quick, before we end our talk on Harbaugh, at least for now, this chapter of it, because it'll continue to go. And if he doesn't go to the NFL, we'll be doing this again next year at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely. 100% our watches on it.
Mm-hmm. So, We've mentioned the franchises that are looking for head coaches. Is there a single one of those franchises that could offer Jim Harbaugh that we believe and he says no? Or do we believe that any NFL franchise that offers Jim Harbaugh, Harbaugh goes?
I think any.
I think, to me, it's any. I think he is just that drunk on wanting to get back to the NFL and winning the championship. I think he is that hungry to go back. If he's 2 feet in anywhere, it's coaching in the NFL. I think he got that taste in San Francisco, had to go to Michigan, is finally at that point where he's kind of in demand. And I think if there's any NFL team that offers him a job, he's gone.
Well, and like Sam said, his stock is so high right now, because you think about it, if he stays at Michigan and they don't even, you know, come close to having the same success, say they only win like 9 games and they're not even in the Big Ten championship, then the questions and the doubts start to come back with Harbaugh. And like Sam said, then the stock would still be there. There are still going to be NFL teams that want a better coach and want to move on
at that point.
Yeah, and they're not going to be willing to pay him, you know, double the amount of money that he's currently making right now. So,
And I think it's a great point, too, because I think the feeling that we have around Michigan and Ohio State and where they are isn't necessarily exactly where they are. Ohio State is this close, just a snap of the finger from winning those games. Ohio State should have been in this title game instead of Georgia. Yeah. I mean, Ohio State probably would have won the championship if we base it off of what we just took in Monday night, if they just hit a field goal at the end of the game. Like, Ohio State was better than that team in that game at times. Like, Ohio State, it could turn real quick on a dime. So I think you're
making a lot of Michigan fans unhappy with that statement, right?
but it is true.
It's an accurate statement, though.
Yeah, and to be honest, right. Michigan's finally in a place where in the last 10 years they hadn't been, where they can compete. Now, I think they had a close game in 16. They've had a couple of matchups, but now finally they're winning, they're controlling games. Mm-hmm. But like, there's this feeling that Michigan's put itself in the front lane or in the fast lane in this rivalry a little bit. And it's like, guys, we got to remember this was a close game in the fourth quarter, and a couple of home run plays just sent this away. Like the feeling that you have when you look at the score, like that's not necessarily indicative of where these two are currently. They're both right here.
And Greg Warren, after that game, that Michigan Ohio State game, even said this was a classic, and people are looking at him like he's got a third arm growing out of his forehead because it was a 20-point game. It was a really good game until that fourth quarter, and like you said, two home run hits.
Yep.
And that blew it open.
So, and if we're talking about stock, you're right. Like it's always in danger of maybe not being back-to-back Big Ten champs and having an undefeated regular season. So, all right, let's go ahead and move to halftime. We're a little heavy.
You are listening to Big Ten Plus Four, hosted on Anchor and StreamYard.
I'm Richie, a.k.a. Midnight Agent Raw.
I'm Devin, a.k.a. Special Delivery Dev.
We're the Super Media Bros Podcast. And each week, we give a comedically informative take on movies,
music,
television,
pro wrestling,
and much more. Check us out at supermediabrospodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere else that you can listen to podcasts. Shades on.
We're off.
Once upon a time.
Boring.
It was the best of times. It was the worst.
You got that right.
What's your problem?
We want new stories.
Hi, it's Frankie.
And Garrett. And we host the Ever Trending Story, a weekly podcast where we bring to life a fictional story created by our own minds and some of the hottest, craziest trends from the internet.
Find us wherever you download podcasts and be sure to join the fun on social media at Ever Trending Pod.
Oops, I forgot I had it built in.
I know.
Double like, it up.
Double
third whistle. Quarter.
Double whistle. I forgot.
We really grabbed your attention that time.
I started working in the whistle into the end of the promo itself. So you thought, oh man, Sam's really on it. And here I would have been right on it. And I screwed it up. I gave away my hand. I gave away my tell.
Give away your secret.
Oh boy. Okay. So we don't have a ton of time here for the second half, but we do want to compress a little bit into our Big Ten basketball coverage because we're getting ready to fully shift from football into basketball, which makes one Dalton pretty excited because basketball is just my favorite. It's the best time of the year. I love Big Ten basketball. And now we're at a point even more than football, both of you, huh?
Yeah. My grandpa he was a basketball coach in high school in the state of Indiana. And when he retired, I never knew him as a basketball coach, but we would always watch college basketball. And so it was ingrained in me. Plus growing up in Indiana, basketball is ingrained anyway. So like even though I love football, basketball is my favorite time of year. Absolutely.
Same, Tony.
Yeah, same. I mean, mine is a little different because I mean, I grew up being raised primarily by my grandparents just because of how mom's job was. You know, she worked from like 5 a.m. until like 2 p.m. So, you know, I would usually go with my grandparents, and that was about the only thing that was on was college basketball. So, I mean, I got into it, you know, whatever game was on, I was watching and just 100% enjoyed it. I mean, I had a blast with it.
Oh, well, how about that? Okay, so that's all of our time of the year.
Sharing time is nice.
Yeah. So let's take a look, though, at the Big Ten leaderboard for Big Ten men's basketball currently, because it's pretty interesting. Of course, Michigan State knocks off its rival this past weekend, Michigan. And look, I've had my fair share of Michigan State and Michigan experiences now in all sports. In terms of, I guess, basketball, that was just about the ugliest game and rendition of this rivalry I've ever seen. That was clunky. I was in Maryland watching it on my phone, and I triple-taked on the score. I was like, I finally got it to a spot where I could pull it up, and it was something to 18 getting ready to end the first half. And I was like, this is something else. But Michigan State holds on. They get that win, and then Michigan State goes to Madison, Wisconsin, knocks off the Badgers, and now the Spartans are on a bit of a roll. They got the best win streak in the Big Ten. They've won their last 7 after knocking off a top 25 team in Wisconsin, and right now Michigan State sits tied for first in the Big Ten with the Purdue Boilermakers, which it's interesting that Michigan State found itself here after some of the struggles and health concerns they had early on.
Yeah, we've talked about the fact that these injuries could derail Michigan State. It could really hinder what they were hoping to accomplish inside the conference. But it seems like they're starting to get better, and Michigan State's starting to, you know, play like a normal Tom Izzo team that just, you know, they beat you. They find a way to beat you.
Well, and I think early on, like how we kind of mentioned, when you first looked at Michigan State schedule with Gonzaga, Kentucky, Villanova, Bama, you know, that was a gauntlet of a schedule. And you know, I know Dalton's talked about it. We talked about it. You know, Tom Izzo sets up this meat grinder to start the year, but then it's like, okay, well, now who is the best battle tested team in the Big Ten when it comes to now facing your in-conference opponents? Like, okay, we face the big boy, literally darn near all the big boys outside of the conference, and now, you know, we're facing everybody inside the conference, and they're able to do it, not, you know, necessarily, you know, run away, but handedly. Like, they're able to come away with really solid wins against them.
It doesn't faze you when you see a number next to a team anymore. When you follow mm-hmm. that theory, I mean, part of that theory, the consequences, because there's give and take with everything, is you might deal with injuries. You might deal with a lack of confidence, but luckily for the schedule that was for Michigan State, they were able to win their fair share of games where they never really had to doubt themselves and lose confidence. Cause you worry about that when you're talking about kids. We're talking about 18 to 22 year olds. Like that's a concern, but they were able to get over that. And now they're in a pretty good spot. And go ahead, Sam.
This is why I will come March, never make Michigan State an easy out in the tournament, because of the gauntlet they run at the beginning of the season. They may lose every one of those games, but it desensitizes them to we should be intimidated by these bigger teams. Mm-hmm. They get better throughout the course of the season. And by the time they're playing those teams again, A, they've maybe already played them once before, and B, they're a heck of a lot better, and it doesn't intimidate them going against them anymore.
Yeah, and well, I mean, you look at Gonzaga, like, you know, they were literally one missed shot away at the very end from taking down Gonzaga. So, I mean, you could even look at it like, yeah, they lost, but if I'm Michigan State, I'm like, if we made that shot, we won. Like, we really won that game.
Yeah, played right there with them. And it's interesting, too, because Purdue was the last unbeaten team in the Big Ten for the entire season. The last undefeated in-conference team was Michigan. And, of course, Michigan loses that game, falls to 3-1 now. There's some teams I'm still trying to figure out exactly who they are, what they bring, what we can expect. Michigan's one of them, and I think Michigan started to turn the corner. But, I mean, we're talking about a team that's 2-3 weeks removed from losing to Central Michigan, and all of a sudden has updated its own play where they're a different team. The other team in that boat, Illinois. I don't know what to make of Illinois.
I would say Indiana is another one.
Indiana fits that bill, but I can at least point to reasons for Indiana, okay, and it's injuries.
Yeah,
there's fair some enough. Intangibles that are sitting with Illinois, Michigan, where I'm like, I really don't know what to point at. Where with Indiana, I still haven't seen how severe Race Thompson's injury is, but Xavier Johnson's been hurt, Jalen Hood-Schifino's been out. I think TJD's been banged up a bit. I mean, every one of their most important players and core pieces have dealt with the injury, so I can at least point to something. Michigan and Illinois, I don't know. They're talented, but I don't know what I'm getting each night. Yeah. And maybe they've turned the corner where they're going to be more consistent here down the stretch, because Illinois just put it on last night. Excuse me, Nebraska 76-50. So got a good game out of, excuse me again, Terrence Shannon Jr. With 25 points and 11 rebounds. They've got the talent. It's just, well, as Brad Underwood cites, lack of leadership.
Mm-hmm. Well, they just had a guy leave their team too, indefinitely.
Sky Clark.
So like obviously there's something that's not flowing the way they were hoping it would this year. And like you look at the top two teams of the preseason pick for the order, you've got IU and Illinois, a combined 3-6 in the conference. And they're supposed to be number one and number two, the preseason number one and number two.
Does everybody just finish 10-10? We just have a 14-way tie for the Big Ten this year.
If that happens, Minnesota will be the hottest team in the conference because they're 0-4 already.
Right.
Well, like, hottest team, 10-6.
And can we kind of talk about an underdog team that I think has surprised more people than what we expected? Northwestern.
Hang on. I was going to say, let's hit the fourth quarter, because I think that's worth its own quarter.
Its own quarter. Wow.
Tony read my mind 100%. Northwestern now sits 3-1. It's the only team Michigan State has lost to so far this year. Northwestern. I mean, I think a lot of people before the year had written Chris Collins off for dead with this job because they've went through a couple of turbulent years. Now, remember, he got them to their first ever NCAA tournament appearance in 2016-17 season.
I'm shocked that doesn't earn him just like as long as he wants to stay there.
I know. I kind of feel the same way because at the same point, like, it's Northwestern. Like,
how much can you expect? I mean, I'm not trying to downplay what Northwestern is.
It's not the same resources. Yeah. Like we talk about IU, Miller Kopp transferred from Northwestern to IU because he wanted to play in front of bigger crowds and have more of the big time experience. Like when that's kind of a thing, Pete Nance just left to North Carolina. Ryan Young left to Duke. So you end up with Boo Booey, Chase Audige, and some other cats, pun intended. And
dad jokes.
3-1 to start the year. Yeah. Tony, your mind went there, so I'll start with you. It's incredible what they've done.
Yeah, and I mean, you look at some of their games that they've played, too. Like, one of their losses was to Auburn when they were 13. They lost by 1 point. You know, they beat Michigan. Now, they did just lose to Ohio State, but they get wins against Illinois.
Ohio State's not bad, though.
No, correct. Ohio State's not bad. Like, that's not, again, you know, I always say about there's no such thing as a good loss. That's not necessarily a bad one. And then same with Illinois. They get a party win over them. And then, of course, they beat IU here recently, you know, 84-83. So, I mean, this is a Northwestern team. You know, I know you guys kind of talked about, you know, you guys like Penn State kind of being a dark horse. You know, we've talked about, you know, Rutgers, Maryland. I think Northwestern might be that team this year that I think surprises a lot of people and, you know, kind of steps into that role. Maybe not a favorite to win the Big Ten, but they're going to be a pain for people to have to.
I'm going to take credit for that because last week I said when Northwestern comes back to earth and plays around 500 in the conference. So I'll take credit. Somebody heard me and took it personally. And now the Cats are on a mission.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Tony just had mentioned that they're going to be a pain for teams, and he's right. I don't think they're necessarily a Big Ten title contender. I'm not trying to disrespect. I just don't think they have the talent compared to some of the other teams. But if we're talking Northwestern and the Big Dance in the same breath.
Percy has them as the first four out on the first four out right now.
I mean, we're talking about second time in school history that would ever happen. And this isn't the squad I would have thought it would have happened with. The 16-17 squad going into that year, you knew was going to be all right. They had McIntosh. They had some real players on that team.
They had Gonzaga beat. They had Gonzaga beat in that game, too.
And that bad call where the arm went through the basket. Yeah. Yes. So I'm with you, Tony. I love our prediction before the year of the underdog being Penn State. And I still love Penn State. And there's reasons I could point to. This Northwestern just emergence, I could not have predicted this before the season. I there's nothing about this team before we tipped off that I would have pointed at and said, yeah, they'll be tied for third place in the Big Ten when we're 2 or 3 weeks through big conference action. Like the job that Chris Collins has done with his back against the wall and people starting to kind of clamor that maybe it's time for him to be gone. This is truly, truly phenomenal stuff. So, yeah, I did think that deserved its own time. I was really excited to talk Northwestern
hoops. And we can kind of call this trying to explain the unexplainable because Illinois and Michigan, we just don't know what we've got with them. And they're not really – I mean, Michigan's starting to turn the corner a little bit, like you said, but they're still only 9-6. Like, they're still not out of the woods yet. Like they've shown that they can still be kind of a dumpster fire. And with Illinois, we don't know where we're going with that. You know, they're underperforming. They've won two in a row, but like they're still Northwestern. They're 12-3.
Yep.
Like, and you mentioned they lost to Auburn. Auburn's not bad. Mm-hmm. And at the time they were 13th in the country. So that was a considered a good loss, a quality loss, I guess. Mm-hmm. So like, it's just explaining the unexplainable because it's baffling to me.
And you know
how they're doing it.
You know, what's great too, is there is a game tonight that I think is almost must watch on the men's side. And it's Northwestern hosting Rutgers. How many times could you have said that in years past?
How many times would you have said Northwestern Rutgers? That's going to be a game to watch right there. If you can make your way to Chicago, you can go watch it for $16.
That's true. That's what it says on here anyway.
Yeah, that's the beauty of Welsh Ryan Arena, which they're starting to get more and more fans come out this year because they're winning.
And they're going to have a new facility in the next, you know what, in the next 5 years or whatever they're going to.
For football.
Is it just football? I thought they were adding a whole, but okay, fair enough.
They already did
that's
their
right.
basketball.
That's right, they did.
And it is beautiful, by the way. Yeah. absolutely love the new Welsh Ryan Arena. It will remind you, since both of you are Hoosier natives, it will remind you a lot of a bear with me, listeners, because there's a no great way to lay this out, but it's kind of the size of a bigger Indiana high school gym, and it carries over the intimacy of that. Mm-hmm. And it's really polished and nice. Like, I'm not trying to say it's a high school gym.
For those,
it's an intimate.
Let's put this into context, Dalton. For those that don't have any idea what, you know, like, why in the world would Dalton be commenting that Northwestern's arena is like a high school gym in Indiana? Let's go this far in the state, in the country, the United States of America. 9 of the top 10 biggest high school basketball gyms are in Indiana.
Yep.
Like, we in Indiana, we do basketball right. And yep. I don't get me wrong, I'm in Ohio now, but I will always be from Indiana. You know what I mean? So Indiana, so, Hoosiers take their basketball serious.
Well, and I can tell you, as somebody currently living in Indiana, the 8 years that I was away from the state, especially when I was in DC and Texas, they're like, "Oh, where are you from?" You know, I'm this 6'3" super pale white kid from Indiana, and they're like, "Oh my God, you played basketball?" Not a lick, not a lick. I was like, "You ever seen a newborn baby fawn be born?" And they're kind of like, you know, trying to figure out how to walk, like how to move. That's me, but on like an ice rink. Like, no, it doesn't work.
Well, I love to kind of to that point. I remember my cousin and I would go to basketball camps back in our prep playing days. And we landed at one in Michigan. And one of the drills early in the camp was just doing your shooting form. And so we're lined up across from each other and we're doing our shooting form, and our counselor is going through and correcting everybody. Did and we were down at the end, and he comes down and he looks at both of us and he goes, "Are you guys from Indiana?" and we both like, go,
and in your reach in the cookie jar. "Yes, sir, we are." Yes.
And we're like, "Yes." And he goes, "Y'all are good." And just kept going back and working on everybody else, which was just awesome. Just goes to show how it is in Indiana. Yes, okay. So we mentioned Northwestern Rutgers. That's certainly a game to watch tonight, 9 o'clock. Indiana and Penn State will be tipping at 7 on the women's side. And I know we'll get some more women's coverage in future shows. But there's a slate tonight. Nebraska will host Penn State at 8 o'clock. Number 12, Iowa, the Caitlin Clark Show continues. They host Northwestern, who's still looking for their first Big Ten win, at 7:30. And at 7 o'clock, Michigan State will host Wisconsin. Michigan State fresh off of setting a Big Ten record for most three-pointers tried in a game, putting up 44 threes against Maryland this past weekend. And they hit 19 of them, which tied a Big Ten record for the most hit in a conference game. So a lot of exciting action. That's, again, Michigan State hosting Wisconsin tonight, 7 o'clock. All right, before we wrap up, let everybody know, Sam and Tony, where they can find us.
All right, on Twitter, the TikToks, and Instagram, it's @Big10+4. Spell out the plus. Tony, Facebook, what is it?
Facebook, that's the beauty of Facebook. You can put the plus, you can spell out the plus. It is dealer's choice. You don't have to
just think about the plus.
You're not, you know, you don't have the social construct or the moral construct of having to spell out plus. You can just put the plus in there if you want to.
And then you can find us on oddpodsmedia.com. We're the only sports show on the network, but there's a ton of awesome shows there on the network. Tony, what about our other networks?
So you can also catch us on ASAP, the All Sports All Plays Network, twice a week, because we're that big and we're that good. They're putting us on twice on Wednesdays and Fridays. And then if you want to catch all of our kookiness that we may or may not do here on the show, you can also catch us on Spotify later today.
Perfect. Look at that. That's all the coverage. And nugget for the road, I should mention too, for Big Ten women's basketball, 6 teams in the top 25. So again, a lot
only
of reason
two.
To watch. We'll
only
be talking
two
about
on
it.
The men's side.
Yeah. Which, and there's like 8 receiving votes on the men's side.
And Mike DeCourcy has 11 associated with at least the first 4 out.
So there's a lot of great Big Ten basketball. Make sure you're checking it all out. We'll be covering it in the weeks following. But as we wrap up for one final time, for Sam Sprunger, for Tony Hollinsworth, I'm Dalton Shetler. Thank you all so much for joining us. And until next time, Friday, you can join these two. Until then, so long.
See you later.
Bye.